So, after that, the theme for tonight's talk is ill will. Anger, ill will, irritation, negativity. This whole range of emotions, which basically goes from the most kind of serious and most terrible rage, all the way down to the most slight irritation that we can have almost any time in daily life. This whole range of emotions is basically what I'm talking about when I say ill will. And this ill will, this emotional state, is a very serious hindrance to one's spiritual practice, something which really comes in the way. For that reason, I think it's important to talk about it also to be very pragmatic about it and to talk about how can we overcome this ill will. What can we do about it? Practical ways of dealing with this particular emotion becomes very important. But before I go on to talk about the practicalities of this, how to deal with it, I also want to talk about a little bit about why it is so important and what are the problems with ill will. And I think straight away, some of these things will be very obvious to you, why it is such a bad thing with ill will. I think it's very, very clear. I mean, we all know from our daily lives, if there is a problem with irritation or ill will, it's always going to be disturbing for people around us, our family, friends, acquaintances, and also for colleagues and people you meet in everyday life. There's always problems that arise from ill will. It's very, very obvious. But also, if you look at society at large, you see so many of the problems that we have in society at large, whether it's wars, terrorism, ethnic cleansing, genocide, and all these terrible things that are happening around the world. So much of that is happening because of ill will, because of anger, and because of this particular emotion. So it is a massive problem for society, and it's a massive problem also in our private lives. That is the obvious reason why ill will is a problem. But much more subtle than that, it is also a very big problem if you want to practice a spiritual life. If you want to be a good person, obviously ill will is going to really stand in the way. It's going to be a massive obstacle for you. And the way that ill will is an obstacle, now we're coming more into the Buddhist context here. The first obstacle is simply that ill will in its own right is actually bad karma, according to Buddhism. Bad karma means, of course, that it is, if you have ill will, it has negative consequences for yourself in the future. Ill will is not some kind of neutral thing which doesn't have any consequences. Just on its own, it has consequences. And it ripens in suffering, and it ripens in pain in the future for ourselves and obviously also for others. And of course, ill will is not as serious as acting on that ill will. If you act on ill will through speech and body, of course, that is much, much more serious. But it's still interesting that ill will on its own is actually bad karma, and it ripens in problems in the future. And you can see that, for example, imagine if you die with a state of ill will in your mind. Well, what happens when you do that? What happens if you die with such a state? Well, if you believe in rebirth, obviously that mind is going to go to something which is equivalent to that ill will. So it's going to go to a bad state. It's very obvious. And this is how we can see the ripening of ill will in itself as having bad consequences for the future. That is one aspect why ill will is so problematic. Another aspect is simply that if you have a mental state of ill will, many of you probably know the very famous verse in the Dhammapada, first verse and second verse in Dhammapada, which says that mind is the forerunner. And just like, I don't think I can do it actually verbatim or anything like that, but basically the idea is that mind is the forerunner of all things. So that if you do something with a bad mind state, then bad things are going to come to you. And I think the simile is something like just as the cart follows the ox's hoof when you plow or something like that. So the mind of ill will is always the forerunner. And one way this makes itself happen is that when you, in daily life, when you tend to have irritation or ill will in your mind, then your actions and your speech will tend to be accordingly. They will tend to be negative, and they will tend to be influenced by that ill will. And it's actually very tiring and very problematic to always have to restrain yourself from that ill will. Because that is basically what a lot of the spiritual life is about. It is to understand that when you have a negative mind state, then you have to hold back and you have to restrain yourself. You can't allow these things to come out in action and speech. Because if you do, you're going to be doing all kinds of stupid things, hurting people around you, hurting yourself, and whatever. So it is, in a sense, it's painful to have this, to have ill will. Because once it's there, or irritation, then the tendency will be to act on it, and you have to hold back. And that holding back in itself is painful, and is something which hurts. So for this very reason, if we then can turn the mind around and move it towards, away from ill will, move it towards loving kindness, compassion, empathy, even equanimity with other beings, then you can see that you are, just as you're moving the mind away from that, you will also be moving your other actions of speech and body away from these things. Because just as mind is forerunner when it comes to these negative states, it is obviously also forerunner when it comes to the positive states. So if you have a positive mind state, then it's going to be very easy to do nice things. It comes automatically. It's no longer a burden on you. It happens on its own, so to speak. And the spiritual life becomes much more automatic and much easier to do. So you can see here the enormous benefits of actually improving your mental state. So as it improves gradually, step by step, then gradually, step by step, also virtue, kindness, morality, all these other things happen much more automatic to you, and it becomes much more easy to practice this spiritual life. And I think this is an enormous benefit, obviously, and this is one reason why working on these kind of mind states and trying to turn them around and move them into a direction of kindness instead is so powerful and has so much potential there. But there is more than that, because the other area in which having a positive mind is very helpful is obviously for meditation practice. Ill will, or even slight irritation, or even just negativity, is going to be incredibly problematic in meditation practice. Because the mind is not pure, you're going to find it's very hard to focus on anything, to practice. Even to be mindful is going to be difficult if you have these negative mind states. And the more pure the mind is, the more free it is from these negative states, and the more positive states you have developed, the more powerful your meditation is going to be. So it is actually a very important practice for those people who are serious about meditation practice to try to reduce ill negative states as much as possible there. So these are some of the profound and very important benefits of reducing these negative states. And it's interesting also to note that the Buddha said something very interesting about ill will. Those of you who have some knowledge of the suttas, you may realize that the Buddha usually talked about three types of root problems in the mind. Now these three root problems are, beside ill will, there's also like desire or greed, and the last one is delusion. Delusion basically means that you don't know what's going on. You're looking at the world in a way which is not conducive to happiness for yourself or for others. That's basically what delusion means. And the Buddha said that of these three root defilements, the one which is easiest to get rid of is actually ill will. That's the one which is easiest to deal with. And for that reason alone, it becomes very important, obviously, to deal with this particular thing, because it isn't that difficult. And I think it's obviously, I should say, relatively easy here, because obviously it's not that easy. But it's more easy than, for example, greed or desire. And you can see why. The reason why is obviously because anger or ill will or irritation, it's painful. It's something which hurts you before it hurts the person that you may be angry at or the situation you may be angry at. It's a bit like the ancient simile of picking up a piece of hot coal to throw it at somebody else. Now, the person you burn first when you pick up a piece of hot coal is yourself and not the other person. And anger is, in a sense, exactly the same. If you're going to be angry, you are going to hurt yourself before you hurt the person or whoever it is who is the object of that anger. So for that reason, because it is painful, and we can, not only is it painful, but it's very clear that the consequences are so negative, it becomes relatively easy to overcome it. And there are, of course, also some very good strategies to use to overcome these states. By comparison, a thing like greed, for example, or desire, first of all, if we just desire, very often can be fairly harmless. It doesn't necessarily harm anybody else. And moreover, it tends to be pleasurable. It tends to be, you know, if we desire some food or desire to go to the movies or whatever, all these are pleasurable objects. And for that reason, this desire or greed is something much more difficult to give up because it has this sense of something nice about it usually, something we actually want to do. And the last thing, delusion. Well, delusion is really, really hard to give up. And the reason is because delusion means not understanding things properly. And because you don't understand things properly, you will tend not to see that you don't understand things properly. You won't be able to see this. It is a blind spot for you. You can't see what's going on. And that's why it's so hard to give it up. If somebody else tells you that you should look at it this way, you will tend to reject that because you are already looking at things in a certain way which may not be good, which may actually be conducive to harm and all kind of problems. So delusion is very difficult to give up. So ill will here is the one which is easiest to give up. And also, in addition to that, ill will is the one which is most harmful. Just like I said before, it's harmful for your spiritual life. It's harmful for harmony between you and your family and friends. It is harmful for society in general. So it's a very harmful emotional state. So that's the other reason why it is so. There's a lot of incentive there to give it up because it causes so much trouble for ourselves and others. Whereas greed, as I said before, isn't that harmful. Delusion is very harmful, but because it's so difficult to give up, it's probably not the best place to start. So that is the just to give you some incentive there to practice this. Once we have the incentive, the next aspect is to ask ourselves, well, how? What are the ways? What are the strategies that we can use to give up these negative emotional states? Maybe before I go on to the strategies, I should talk a little bit about because this is quite important as well, the mechanism by which ill will arises in the mind. Because it may seem obvious, but I think it's the Buddha made it very clear in the suttas how ill will actually arises in the mind. So it's quite obviously quite an important topic, otherwise he wouldn't have spoken about it. When I thought about talking about ill will, it occurred to me that a nice title for this sort of talk would be Deal with Anger Before Anger Deals with You. And the reason I thought that would be a good title for the talk is because anger dealing with you sounds, to some people, may sound a bit strange, because anger is not really something which deals with anything. Anger is just something which comes up in the mind. And for anybody who is not a Buddhist and who doesn't have, if you like, a little bit of introspection on how anger works, they won't really understand what is meant by this anger dealing with you. But if you have a little bit of introspection and you know how the mind works, you know that if you are overcome by anger or irritation or negativity, then it's almost like you become a victim of that anger. It's almost like you can't do anything about it. Once it becomes strong in the mind, it's like anger, it becomes the lord, so to speak, the overlord, which controls you. And it's very, very, very difficult to do anything. So this is why it becomes so frightening in a sense, because once we allow it to arise, it becomes very hard to deal with it. The Buddha explained basically what happens with anger. Basically what is happening with anger and ill will is that the reason it arises in the mind is because we are focusing on a repulsive object. We're focusing on something which we don't like, something negative, something which is unpleasant, basically. And when we see this repulsive thing, or we hear something repulsive, or whatever, then ill will, irritation, etc., can arise in the mind because of that. So this is basically what we have to look out for. And this is a place where mindfulness becomes very important. Very often, there's so much said about mindfulness in Buddhism. It's a very, very important concept in Buddhism, the concept of mindfulness. It is useful in all kind of areas. But very often, it is talked about together with insight and understanding. But actually, mindfulness is important already at this very, very simple level of just being able to understand how the mind works and to be able to see what is going on in the mind in terms of these negative states. Already at this point, mindfulness is powerful and very important. Because if you are going to catch yourself about to get irritated or about to get angry, then you have to see what is happening inside the mind. And if your mindfulness is powerful, you will actually be able to see that, if I continue focusing on this object, if I continue listening to what this person is saying, it's only going to be a matter of seconds before something starts to happen. I start to get irritated or I start to get angry. So you can catch yourself very, very early on and you can see that something is about to happen which is not good. And of course, that is very important. And it is very important because, as I said before, once anger gets established in the mind, then you become a slave to it, and it's almost impossible to do anything about it once it's established there. It's not impossible, but it takes time then. It's not going to go away very quickly. It takes much more time and it's much more difficult. The sooner you can catch it, the more effective is going to be the antidote that you put into place to get rid of it. So this is an important power of mindfulness, to actually catch these things early here. But still, you might see that something is going on wrong in the mind. We may see that, if I continue focusing on this, then something bad is going to happen inside of me. We might be able to see that. But that is obviously not in itself enough, because just sitting there and seeing anger arising, it's not going to do anything. We also have to put an antidote into place to do something about it. And that is the next step then. How can we deal with these negative states? What are some effective strategies for dealing with anger and negativity? And these strategies, in a sense, they work on two levels. The first one is that if you catch yourself and you see that you're about to get angry, bang, in comes the strategy here, and you use it to stop it just there, just before it arises. But of course, being realistic, we also have to realize that very often we just won't be able to catch it in time. It's going to be too late. And then these strategies also can be used then to overcome the anger which has already arisen. Even though that's more difficult, obviously it is something that we also have to do. So it has this two-pronged thing that we can use it for. And the first of these strategies is what you might call the strategy of seeing things as the way they are, the way it is. The Way It is a fairly well-known book by an American monk called Ajahn Sumedho, which probably many of you have heard of. He is one of the senior Western disciples of Ajahn Chah. And he lives in England, and he wrote a book many years ago called The Way It Is. I must admit, I can't remember the content very well anymore because I read it about 10 years ago or something. But the essence, as I remember, of that book is that the world basically works in a certain way. This is the way the world is. And because the world works in a certain way, then we're going to have to accept it, that this is the way the world works. And the point here is that so often we get angry and we get upset and we get irritated about things that we can't do anything about. There's nothing we can do about things. We meet people who say stupid things, who say irritating things, but that's just the way life is, isn't it? You're not going to be able to get away from meeting people who say stupid or irritating things. It's impossible. This is the nature of being a human being, is that you're going to meet stupid people. So, unfortunately, but that's the case, isn't it? And sometimes they're not even stupid. Sometimes it's just we who perceive them to be stupid. That's the other thing here. So because of that, because this is the way it is, you basically what you have to do is say, I can't do anything about this. I just have to sit back. I'm going to have to accept. I'm going to have to just let go, basically. There's nothing else to do here. That's all I can really do. And it can be this. I know many people who have used this sort of technique. And they're not Buddhists. They're not even religious. Just ordinary people in ordinary life. Because they have realized for themselves that, well, this life is like this. Reality is like this. It throws up all these painful and negative situations. And it's just, most of the time, it is completely, actually all of the time, I should say, not most of the time, all of the time, it is senseless to react with anger, because it is not going to change anything. The world is like this. Things are like this. There's nothing I can do. So what this means is that when you... in your life, and you see that something is happening, somebody is saying something which is irritating or negative or bad, and you see that if I continue focusing on this, then anger or irritation is going to arise in my mind, and straight away I tell you, well, this is life. This is what I have to expect. This is the way people are. And because people are this way, because this is the way things are, there is no reason to get irritated. There's no reason to get angry about this. I'm going to have to accept this. I'm going to have to let go. And then there already you have a very, very powerful technique for overcoming these unwholesome things. So that is the first strategy or technique, if you like. The second one is what you might call giving people or giving things, situations, but particularly people, giving them the benefit of the doubt. And this is another very, very important thing to do, because it is so easy to judge situations and to judge people and to think that we understand where they're coming from, what they're doing, and why they're doing what they do. And because we think we understand what is happening, we have the right to get angry, we have the right to become upset and to get irritated with these people. But so often we just don't understand. So often we judge people in the wrong way. We take the situations wrongly, not really understanding what is going on. And we get upset and irritated for nothing, because there wasn't really anything there to get upset with. For example, we may feel that somebody is acting in a way which is strange and wrong and irritating. But then we actually realize that it's got nothing to do with us that they're acting in this way. This is the way they are. This is the way this person is. And they're like this to everybody. It is just one of their habits, completely impersonal thing. And because of that, you just have to give that person the benefit of the doubt. They're not coming from anger or ill will or from negativity or trying to harm us or trying to be stupid or trying to do anything wrong. It's just the way they are, just the way they have been conditioned in life, that they do this particular thing, which happens to irritate us. So we have to give the person the benefit of the doubt, that they're not doing anything purposely to make us irritated or angry here. And there is a nice saying, I think it's a French saying originally here, which I really like. And this saying goes something like this, that to understand everything is to forgive everything. And I'm sure you can relate to that from just what I just said just now. That if you understand everything about other people, if you understand the way they are conditioned, the reason why they act the way they do, if you understand their sufferings, if you understand their sorrows and their pains, if you understand everything about a person, then you can forgive them, because you, in a sense, can put yourself in their shoes, and you understand exactly why they're doing what they're doing. So to understand everything is to forgive everything. And it becomes very powerful, because it means that if you don't forgive somebody, if you can't let go of the anger, it means that you're not understanding them. It means that you are not, there's something there you're not seeing. If you had seen it, you would have been able to forgive. So this, again, the second method, giving people the benefit of the doubt, again, can become very powerful. And again, as I said before, you can use it at the moment when you think anger is about to arise. You say, wait a minute, I don't really understand this person. I don't really know where they're coming from. Why should I judge them? There is no need to judge them. Much better to let go and to give them the benefit of the doubt. And again, if anger has already arisen, then again it can become a very useful way of thinking about what has already happened. So both of those techniques can be very powerful and can be very strong. But they're very kind of non-religious. They are just ordinary psychology, which probably any psychologist could tell you. But just ordinary common sense, really, to look at things this way. But now I want to move on to some methods which are more like Buddhist methods of overcoming anger. And the first of these methods is to use the laws of karma to help you overcome these negative states. And there's two ways we can use the laws of karma. The first one is to think that there is no need for me to take revenge or to get angry with this person, because if this person really has been done something wrong, really has been nasty in some way, then they will get retribution through the laws of karma. I don't have to deal with them. The laws of karma will deal with them on their own. And besides, I don't really know if they have been nasty anyway. So either way, there's no point in actually being angry with them or being upset with them. And the laws of what is important here is maybe to have some understanding of how powerful these laws of karma are. If you accept the laws of karma, then the Buddha said that the law of karma is not like a one-to-one retribution. You do something bad and you get exactly the same thing in return. It doesn't work like that. The law of karma has this incredible multiplier effect. So a person does something bad and they get something in return many, many, many fold over because of that. And this can be frightening, it can be scary, because you get the sense that doing bad things is actually something which can cause so much suffering and so much harm for yourself in the future. So when you see something doing something which you think that they are doing it for a wrong reason, they are being nasty or something, then think about how much suffering they're creating for themselves. They may be creating a little bit of suffering for you because you have to go through the situation, but they are creating far, 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 far more suffering for themselves in the future. And this way you can turn the attention a little bit away from yourself. Forget about yourself for a minute. It's so easy to be self-centered. I think that's one of the human conditions. We always tend to be self-centered and look at ourselves and think, oh, I'm really hurt. And it's obvious because we can feel our own pain. So it's quite natural to be self-centered to some extent. But in this case, it's very wise to turn the attention away from yourself and turn it towards the other person instead and realize that the pain that they are creating for themselves is just so enormous and so bad, and the results for them in the future are going to be very severe. And then you can actually turn potential irritation, potential anger, into empathy and compassion instead. Because this is what compassion is all about. Compassion is about seeing the suffering of others. And when you see the suffering of others, well, often you tend to feel a sense of, you feel something there. So you feel that, ooh, this is terrible that this person or this animal or whoever has to suffer so much. So if you're not blinded by anger already, then you might be able to give rise to that sense of compassion, empathy to this other person, because you see what a terrible state they are in. And again, I think personally, I feel this can be a very powerful technique. It's obviously a Buddhist technique, but it's something I think everybody should try to use, because it can turn something potentially unwholesome into something wholesome. And that is obviously what we are really trying to do, is to eliminate the unwholesome so that we can give rise to the wholesome instead. So if you can do everything in one go, great, go for it. That's the way to go. The second way that we can look at karma and make use of karma to overcome these negative states is to realize that if something bad happens to us, then very often it is because of our own bad karma in the past. We are probably deserving of this. It may not be a nice thought, but the point here is not so much that we have done anything, something specific in the past that we deserve now to suffer for that. That is not so much the point I want to make, because a lot of the problems that we encounter in daily life cannot often be traced to a specific cause, to a specific action that we've done before, either in this life or in a previous life. Rather, it is much more useful to look at this as the result of karma, or having been born into the human state. Because the human state is a state of mixed happiness and mixed suffering. There's a little bit of each. And being born as a human being means, as I said before, that you're going to meet all kinds of people. You cannot avoid people who are going to irritate you. You cannot avoid accidents. You cannot avoid troubles with the government or with whatever. These things are going to happen. And this is just the way it is. And you're going to have to accept it. And it is, if you like, the karma, the result of having been born as a human being, basically. A human being means there's going to be a fair share of suffering in your life. You're not going to get away from it. Obviously, you're going to have more happiness than suffering, most of the time anyway, because that is also the result of being human, is that you get mostly pleasant states. But you're not going to get away from those negative things. So again, when you look at it that way, you say, okay, I'm human, what do I expect? I have to expect these things. So you don't get so upset when they happen to you. Now this, I want to say a little bit more about this, because what I just said may sound very deterministic. It may sound like, well, I should just sit back and accept whatever happens to me and never really try to deal with it, never try to do anything about it. And that is not really what I'm saying. What I'm saying is just that if something bad happens to you, then instead of getting angry, which is always a bad solution in almost all situations, I'm not going to try to speculate whether there are good situations we get angry in, but I would say it's always basically a bad response. So because of that, it is useful to think that I'm human, these things happen to me, and this is the way it is. But, and then comes the next step, to do something about it. When you realize that to be human, there is a lot of suffering in being a human being, then you ask yourself, well, what can I do about this? What should my strategy be to reduce this suffering in myself? And here comes in another beautiful simile, which is taught by the Buddha in the suttas. And this is the famous simile of the lump of salt, which you may have heard before. And what this simile essentially says is that if you have a lump of salt, now this lump of salt is a simile for the amount of bad things that you have done in the past. If you have a lump of salt and you stick that lump of salt in the glass of water, then that water is going to become undrinkable. Now the water in the glass of water is the amount of good karma that you have made. So you have made a small amount of good karma, only a glass of water, and you have made a whole grain of salt, a large grain of salt. I'm talking about something quite substantial now, not one of those tiny grain of salts we normally see. You put that in a glass of water, it becomes undrinkable. That is the result of the bad karma. It tastes terrible. It becomes undrinkable. And that is that taste, that bitterness of that taste, that is the experience of the bad actions that you have done. It becomes bad. Because you have done a small amount of good karma and a fair amount of bad karma, it becomes painful. Now the opposite is if you take that grain of salt and you stick it in a large body of water, like a lake or a river. In the sutta, the Buddha says you stick it in the river Ganges. And of course, if you stick that lump of salt in the river Ganges and you stir it up really well, you won't be able to taste it anymore. Or maybe you will be able to taste a very, very tiny, tiny bit. There obviously will be salt in there, so there should, at least in theory, be a tiny taste. But the taste will almost have disappeared. And here again, the water in the river Ganges or in the large lake that you're putting your salt in, that is like the good karma you have made. You have made an enormous amount of good karma in your life. Because of that, the results of the bad karma will hardly be noticeable to you. You will hardly know that they're even happening here. So this then becomes a strategy. This becomes the right way of dealing with the unpleasant things in life. The wrong way is to get angry and making even more bad karma. But the right way is just to realize that if I make good karma in this life, then I will experience the negative results of my past bad karma will become much less painful. And that becomes a very powerful incentive to do good. Now, obviously, to make a whole Ganges river of good karma is not easy. This is I think the river Ganges is something like, if you're an arahat, you've made a river Ganges of good karma. But at least you can make much more than a glass of water. You can maybe make a bucket of water of good karma, or a small puddle of good karma, or a basin of good karma, or maybe even a small lake of good karma. You can make a lot, and the more you make, the more diluted that taste of salt is going to be in that body of water. So that is the way to do it. Don't be fatalistic. This is not the fatalistic religion, Buddhism. It's about dealing with things in a skillful way, in a wholesome way, and not in an unwholesome way. The other thing about this is that sometimes you may come across situations which are so difficult to deal with that you don't really know what to do. For example, there may be a situation where somebody is very irritating over a long period of time, and you realize that even though you use these skillful techniques, you try to use them, you can't actually make them work. And fair enough, we have to be realistic about spiritual life. Spiritual life is about both being idealistic, but also realistic. Don't be so idealistic that you try the impossible in your spiritual life. Otherwise, you're just going to get frustrated. And frustration is another form of anger. So there you have a problem again. So the thing to do is sometimes, if you come across a situation which is really difficult, and sometimes it is best maybe to try to avoid that situation. Avoid the person or avoid the situation to the best of your ability, so you don't have to deal with something which essentially you don't feel up to, and which you can't do, basically. This is realism in the spiritual life. Sometimes these things happen, and it's okay. Maybe you feel that, well, if I just walk away, that will have a negative impact on me or a negative impact on the other person. But the point is that if you find it very difficult, then the impact of that negativity or irritation is going to be much, much worse than the impact of sometimes just staying away and staying aloof. So because at least when you stay aloof, you don't have to do it with a mind of negativity or ill will. You just do it because you realize that this is what I have to do in this particular situation. So again, it's not about being deterministic, the spiritual life. It's not about accepting everything as it is. But it is about making the best out of the situation and sometimes even avoiding situations which are too difficult, or even finding ways out of situation which are neither avoiding nor anything else, but using your imagination and intelligence to find a way of dealing with it which is not unwholesome. So that is the karma aspect of using karma to overcome ill will. The last thing I want to talk about for overcoming these negative states is I want to bring up a simile which Ajahn Brahm wrote about or has written about in his book, Opening the Door of Your Heart. And it's a very profound simile. And I must say that this book which Ajahn Brahm has written, Opening the Door of Your Heart, on the surface it may seem like a very simple book. And it is a very simple book on the surface. All the stories are very easily read, and they are very easy to take in on the superficial level. But some of these stories are really profound. And if you look at them carefully, you will see that there is a lot of profundity in these stories. So often it's worthwhile reading this book many times over to actually allow the stories to sink in properly and to understand the deeper aspects of them. And one of these stories, which actually has a very deep aspect to it, is the story, which you may remember, is in the chapter of anger and forgiveness, I think it's called, something like that. It's the first story there. It's a simile of the red light. And this simile, which Ajahn Brahm brings up, and he doesn't explain it in that much detail, so you have to be quite perceptive to understand the full depth of this simile. But the point of this simile is that what Ajahn Brahm says here is that sometimes you might see somebody and they are driving along, they're in a hurry, they have a meeting they want to get to, there's something important, somewhere important that they have to get to. And just as they are approaching a light, it turns red. And they get angry, they get really, really upset at this red light. They start shouting, "You terrible light! You got angry because you saw me coming around the corner. You knew I was coming around the corner. You terrible, terrible light." And they might even get out of the car grab hold of the thing which the light is standing on and shake it and say, "You evil light, you just did this on purpose." And of course, the point here is, of course, that if other people see you do that and they see you starting shaking a red light because they get so angry with it, they will think that you are a bit funny and a bit crazy even. And fair enough, you know, you're acting in a slightly crazy way if you start shaking a red light. You are treating this light as if it has a will of its own, as if it is deciding to do something, which of course it isn't. And the point here is, of course, that a red light has an electronic circuit in it, and this electronic circuit tells the light, after 3 minutes you become red, after another 2 minutes you become green again, and after another 3 minutes you become red again. So it is absolutely silly to go to a red light and shout at it and scream at it, because there is absolutely nothing that a red light can do about that situation. A red light is completely without any decisions. Yes, I'm going to get red now when that person comes. It doesn't do that. A red light just becomes red of its own. It's very obvious, isn't it? But the point of this simile, and I don't know how clear it is when you read it, is that people are in effect just like red lights. When you come across somebody who does something which is not nice, come across somebody who does something you feel is a bit nasty or negative or something which you don't like, then in effect you can see them as a red light. Why is that? Because this person is doing this not because they are thinking, "Ha, I'm going to get this person." They are doing it because some kind of condition which has arisen, some kind of cause which has happened inside of them. Remember, in Buddhism, we teach the doctrine that there is no self. So there's nobody sitting in there and thinking, "Aha, I'm going to treat this person badly." There's just conditions and there's causes arising in the mind. And these causes and conditions make this person do these things in exactly the same thing as causes and conditions make a red light go red every 5 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever. It's a very powerful simile, and it's very difficult to actually grasp it fully. You can only grasp this fully once you start to really move towards enlightenment, I would say. Because to understand non-self fully, it's only a person on the path to enlightenment which can understand these things. But it is very useful still, nonetheless, if you can grasp a general idea of what is going on here, that a person is like a red light because they are conditioned by causes and by all kinds of things around them, then you will start to understand much more about Buddhism, and you get a much more very profound understanding of what runs people around you. But because it is difficult to understand, because it is profound, you will not always be able to make this work, because it's just too much, basically. But still, it's something that you can play around with and see if you can make it work. Okay, so those are the five ways that I want to talk about ways of overcoming these negative emotions. I have the way that you should use these five ways, I should say a little bit about that, is, first of all, it's not necessary, obviously, to use these things just as I have been mentioning them now. Very often, the most effective way of using something is bringing your own understanding and your own wisdom into the picture. Because it is when it is your own understanding and your own wisdom which uses a particular technique, it becomes much more powerful for you. It's not something which you're using automatically, but it's something which you really feel that you understand in your heart. And that is what makes it powerful. So don't use these things automatically, but think about them and reflect and see if there is a way that you can make them real in your own life and make them powerful in your own life. And you can even use completely different strategies. If you have your own favorite strategy which works for you, then you can use that as well. It's basically these strategies, the way you know whether they are good or not, is by the results they give. It's the result which is the important factor here in whether these strategies are good or not. And the way to use them is that don't wait with using these things until a situation happens when you actually need it. Try sometimes to reflect on these things. Reflect on whether any of these techniques make sense to you. Reflect, maybe bring up a person which sometimes irritates you. maybe even a colleague, or maybe even a family member. You know what it's like if you've lived together for a long, long, long time. Then there's always a tendency that there's small things in that person's character which will tend to irritate you. It comes up, and it's like they're pushing a button, and irritation comes up. So when you are by yourself, see if you can think about this person or that situation and bring up one of these techniques and see if you can overcome that problem by using this technique. So in a sense, you are building up some muscle before the situation actually happened. And you're making these perceptions, these are basically perceptions or ideas, you're making them work before the situation occurs, so that when the situation happens, you have some power there, you have some muscle that you can use. So this becomes important. The one thing which I haven't talked about at all, and which you maybe surprises some of you, is I haven't talked about metta practice or loving kindness practice, because this is a very powerful technique that we use in Buddhism. And the reason I haven't talked about this is basically because I wanted to talk about how to deal with anger just as it is about to arise, or when it has already arisen. Now, loving kindness is something that you should use not when anger is already there, but you should use it when you're feeling good, when you're feeling happy, when you're feeling good about yourself. You don't have any particular irritations or angers to the people around you. That's when you should develop it. Because if you already have a mind which is negative, it's very difficult to make loving kindness work. It just doesn't come up in the mind. So build up loving kindness, certainly do loving kindness meditation, or even just loving kindness practice of any kind. Do that, because it is a very powerful technique to overcome anger. But do it when you're feeling good, when you're feeling happy. That's the time to do it. And then as you practice this loving kindness, as you start to perceive the good in people around you, this is what loving kindness essentially is about. It's about perceiving the goodness in people around you. As you do that, then this is again another powerful way of counteracting anger, because seeing goodness is the opposite of getting angry. And the more goodness you see, the less likely it is that you will become irritated or angered by anybody or by any particular person. So definitely use it, but don't use it when you're angry already. Okay, so the last thing I should maybe say is that, like all things in the spiritual life, is that don't be impatient. Practice these things over long periods of time. Test them out. And don't look for results straight away. Look for results after maybe a few months, few weeks, after years in particular. And then you will start to see that these things actually work. One thing I always do in my monastic life is I always look back at myself and look at what was I like when I started out as a monk, and what am I like now? And that makes me very happy when I do it that way. But if I look at all the flaws which are still to get dealt with, then it can sometimes be a bit more depressing. But you have to have that long perspective, and you have to have the perspective over maybe 10 years even, which I have as a monk now. It doesn't have to be that long, but that is very helpful, because you can see a lot of progress in 10 years' time. So don't be impatient, work at it slowly and carefully, and one thing is absolutely sure, if you do it rightly, do it the right way, the results will happen. Okay. Any questions or comments or anything anybody want to say here? Yes, sir. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's true. And this is one of the places, that's why we find resistance. You can use these techniques, which I just mentioned, but you're going to find a resistance in there often, and often they won't work. And very often, that is precisely, as you say, it's the ego, it's the self which gets in the way. They have hurt me, I am upset, right? It becomes a personal thing, And one of the ways of actually countering that is, one of the ways which I sometimes use as well, is that to think that, well, this person, this is actually not a personal thing. If this person does something bad or does something wrong, it's not personal. The reason they do it is because if it is directed towards you, it is some kind of aspect within you which has triggered that particular thing. Now, if that aspect had been present in some other person, it would also trigger that thing. So it is an impersonal thing. There's nothing to do with you, basically. So you have to think of these things in impersonal ways, and you can start to take it away. But I think you're quite right that in all situations, this is never going to be perfect. You're never going to be able to overcome anger 100% like this. So you're just going to have to gradually reduce it and reduce it and reduce it. And until you become an anagami, almost fully enlightened, there's always going to be a residue there of anger, or at least potential anger left. But one of the other things about practicing the spiritual path is, as you practice and as you go along this path, you will find that your sense of ego is going to get reduced slowly and surely. As you become more virtuous, you find a sense of internal happiness inside you. That sense of internal happiness is independent of the causes outside. You don't feel that you have to defend yourself so much anymore, because you have something powerful inside of you which works instead. So you can actually start to leave behind the ego, and you can leave the things behind gradually, step by step. So the spiritual path itself, with all the various factors that it actually employs, will slowly but surely reduce that problem as well. Okay. Anybody else have anything they want to say here? Okay.
Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Sanghang Namami.